quite a long time ago when I, in fact, before we emigrated to the United States, and I was talking to one of my mentors, Rav Meir Soloveitchik, about coming to the States and what to do and so on. And he said, if there are places for people to learn Torah, you don't have to teach, unless there are people who want to learn from you. So you don't have to sell yourself and persuade people, but if there are people who want to learn, then you have to teach. So you need to just check out and find out. So I thought, Motzei Shabbos, I thought I'm in Los Angeles, let's just check out. Is there anybody with nothing to do on a Motzei Shabbos who might want to learn? Because that's something that we would then like to do. And the response has been so wonderful and really means a great deal to me, and so happy to be able to get this opportunity to see so many of you who I don't normally have the opportunity to see, and to share just a little bit of Divrei Torah and the process. Shabbos is very odd, because you would think the prototype of Shabbos should be Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a Shabbos Shabboson, Shabbos of Shabboses. And if the idea is a day of holiness, a day of sanctity, you would expect the Torah to require that we spend Shabbos in Tfilo, we daven, should be in daven and shul the whole day, probably fast. Why do we eat Sholosh Seudos? Got to have three meals. Why is that important? Oneg Shabbos, why must we enjoy ourselves on Shabbos? Enjoy ourselves the whole week. Why Shabbos, the holiest of all days? It's a holier day than Yom Kippur. Although we call Yom Kippur Shabbat Shabbaton, Shabbos has more Kedusha. Where do we see that when there's Kedusha, you're allowed to and encouraged to enjoy yourself? Normally when there's Kedusha, there's restraint. Kedushim tiyu, Purushim tiyu, Chazal say. To be holy, to have sanctity, means to be withdrawn. It means to be detached. It doesn't mean to engage in the pleasures of life. And yes, there's an element of Kedusha that is that, but when we talk about a special time of Kedusha, why is it that there is such emphasis on enjoyment? And what is the nature of that enjoyment? And that's really what I want to explore with you this evening. What are the guidelines? What are the principles behind the enjoyment of Shabbos? What are we meant to be doing as far as enjoyment is concerned? And why are we meant to be doing those things? And to do that, let's start off exploring what is Shabbos. Now, there are three places I could go to have a look and see if we want to get an idea of what is Shabbos. There are three places we could go to have a look and see. The one would be the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch is very interesting, because the Shulchan Aruch orders things quite sequentially. It's a very linear system of ordering. It starts in the morning with the things you do every morning when you get up, and then you daven, and the things that you do through the day, and then the Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's all very sequential. And so the laws of Shabbos there will start with the first things you do: preparation for Shabbos, getting your house ready for Shabbos, Kiddush, Seudah. It'll go through the process. That's how the Shulchan Aruch works. The second place we could look is the Rambam, and the Rambam generally starts, when he opens up, he generally starts with the concept and then extrapolates the halachot from the concept. And the third place we could look at is the Gemara. Now the Gemara starts differently. When the Gemara starts with a topic, it starts with the kernel. It starts with the very core of the ideas. It's not linear, it doesn't work with any kind of timeline, and it's not conceptual, it doesn't start with principles and then extrapolate details from the principles. It starts with the very kernel, with the core of the issue, and then it works out in all sorts of directions. Kind of imagine like a sphere, and it starts off in the center of the sphere, and then it moves into all directions, slowly building the sphere in all directions as it goes, until the picture is complete at the end of the Masechta. So we would expect, when we open up Masechta Shabbos, that in the first pages we will find the kernel, the very core of the idea of Shabbos. That's what we would expect. And it's very interesting. I find in most Masechtas, when you open it up with that in mind, you start off and you actually start laughing. It's actually funny how these Masechtas open up. And there are many examples of that. If you look at just two of the Masechtas that I've been working with recently, if you look at Kiddushin. Kiddushin is romance, sanctity, marriage. What are the opening words of Masechta Kiddushin? Isha niknes, a woman can be bought. And she costs a prute. Is that how you start a book on marriage? Is that what you would do? It's so weird. Gittin, the Masecht of Divorce, starts with a weird case of his in one country, she's in another country. It doesn't start off saying there's a way to get divorced, there's a mechanism divorce, there's a thing called a get, this is how it works, this is how it operates. Starts off the first Mishnah. How may we get Mimdinus Hayam? A person's overseas, sends with a Shaliach, sends. Why? It's strange, it's odd, and it's very interesting. Usually my first shiurim on the opening of a Masechta are around that thing. Why start with that? And when you begin to unravel it and you realize those first lines that Rebbe chose to start each Masechta with are key, they're the absolute heart of the whole concept. So what does Masechta Shabbos start with? Yetzias HaShabbos Shtayim Shehem Arba Bifnim V'Shtayim Shehem Arba B'chutz. There are two different ways, which in fact are four, that you can transgress the law of carrying on Shabbos. That's how it starts. Not, hey, there's a thing, Shabbos, God rested on the seventh day, nothing. And if you're going to start with some of the obvious things, cooking on Shabbos, start with davening on Shabbos. Two things that you can do here, four things here, Yitzis, we're talking about Yitzis. We're talking about Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYochid, about public domains and private domains and moving objects from public domains to private domains. Is that the core of the idea of Shabbos? And I would challenge us to say, yes, it is. It is the core of the ideas of Shabbos. The soul, the heart of Shabbos is in those opening words. The ideas of carrying lie at the very core of Shabbos. And let's understand why. Because on Shabbos, you're not meant to change things. Hashem created the world, and He stopped on Shabbos. So there's no creation on Shabbos. There's no technical creation. You can create ideas, but you can't create things, and you can't modify things in any kind of significant way. So what's carrying got to do with it? Why should carrying be forbidden? I understand you can't turn on the lights, and you can't turn on the car, and you can't cook, and you can't bake, and you can't manufacture, and you can't complete things, and you can't write. I understand all that. But why should you not be able to carry your siddur to shul? Go and explain that. Why can't you take your talus to shul? Why can't you take some challahs to your neighbor? Assuming there's no eruv. Why can't you do those things? What are you creating? So we see here the Gemara starts off defining the outer edge of technical creation. The outer edge, not the obvious ones. What is the most subtle form of changing matter? And the answer is changing its place. When you move something, you change it. I think that in quantum physics and modern physics, that's kind of understood already, that there is some kind of physical change that takes place when an object moves its position. But halakhically, we work with domains, not just moving it from one place to another, a few centimeters, a few inches, or feet, or even miles. It's not about the distance. What's important is the context in which the object is. So you could imagine that, for example, if this couch, this chair, were out on the sidewalk, it's not the same object as it is sitting over here. Isn't that right? That's junk waiting to be disposed of, and this is a piece of furniture. And if this was in the Getty Museum with a chain around it, and a plaque that said, you know, very special Blumenstruck chair, and you'd have people standing around and saying, wow, you know, this is, look at the Blumenstruck chair, and they look at it from different positions, they photograph, it's the same chair. But it's not the same chair. Where you place something changes it. Where you choose to position something. And even within a home, where you put the furniture, where you hang the pictures, position, context changes everything. If you get tired of things, you move things around. You move your furniture around. You move your pictures around. The room looks different. You change things. All you've changed is position. Everything's the same. There are no new things. Because context defines. And that's something we've lost sensitivity to realize the extent to which context defines. The context of an idea defines it. The context of a word defines it. The context of an object defines the object. And an object in Rishus HaRabin is different from that same object in Rishus HaYochid. And when you transfer something from Rishus HaRabin to Rishus HaYochid, or you move at a significant distance within Rishus HaRabin, you've changed its context, and in changing its context, you've changed it. So what we see right in the opening of Masechta Shabbos is a way of looking at the world. Don't just look at objects. Look at the whole picture. See the objects in context. See the objects in relationship to one another. See the objects in relationship to the framework in which they're placed. And context defines people too. And we see that right away in the same Mishnah. The Mishnah goes on to give an example. Ha'ani omed b'chutz uval habayis bifnim. The poor man stands outside and the balabos stands inside. Poshat ha'ani es yodi lifnim, and the poor man puts his hand inside. V'nosam l'tzich yodo shel balabayis, and he gives the balabayis something. Oy shenotal mitoicho, he took something out of the balabayis' hands. Vahotzi, and the oni takes his hand out, the poor man takes his hand out. So there's the picture. Poor man comes up to the gate, puts his hand through, gives something to the balabais. Or puts his hand in, takes something out of the balabais's hands, puts it in his pocket. Says the Gemara is chayev. That's hotza. He's changed the oni, the poor man has changed the context. But why talk about poor man and rich man? Who says they're poor and rich? What's that relevant? And if they're both poor, is there any difference? And if they're both balabatim and they're neighbors, is there any difference? Why tell us that they're a balabais and a poor man? Because people are defined by their context. And a person who lives within his Rishus HaYochid, within his private domain, is a balabos. And a person who's wandering up and down the street is an oni. We're used to looking at it that way. We look at it differently. We see a person driving up and down the street in his Bentley, we say he's an oshu. And we see somebody living in a small little apartment in a shaken up business, a building, and we say he's an oni. That's not how Chazal sees it. That's not how the Torah sees it. When you're wandering in the street, you're a wanderer. You're an oni. You don't have a place. At that moment, you don't have a place. At that moment, you're moving from place to place. You're wandering. Doesn't matter for what reason. Doesn't matter that you've chosen to wander. If you take a snapshot of that person at that time, he's a wanderer. And a person who's got a home, and he comes into his home, and his home is his castle, and he can close the door, and he can decide who comes in and who doesn't, that's the definition of a Baal Habayis. Baal Habayis is a person who has Baalus, has some ownership, who can say, you may not come in here. And if you do come in here, these are the rules of my home, this is the way you behave in my home. He can say that, he's a Baal Habayis. That's doesn't say Oni and Oshi, doesn't say rich man, poor man, it's interesting. It's poor man, balabais, are the two opposites that the Mishnah uses. A balabais is somebody who has a domain that he controls. And an oni is somebody who doesn't even have a little domain that he controls. So we learn in that opening Mishnah that not only does physical, geographical context define an object, it defines a human being too. It's just that on Shabbos there's no issue to change your own definition. You can change on Shabbos, it's only objects you can't change. You, as the creator, can't change objects around you, but you can change yourself. Subject can change. So, you can walk in and out of your property, that's not a problem. It's interesting, you can't walk out of your city, there's a limit to where you can walk to, but you can walk in out of your Rishus HaYochid and your Shazam, that you can do on Shabbos, but you can't take an object with you because you're changing the object. But what we do need to see is, even though you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, it still defines you. Your home makes you a balabais, and the street makes you an oni. Makes you in some way impoverished. You've lost a certain level of control. An oni is somebody who has no control. So if you're walking in the street and you've got to see billboards that you would never put in your house, you're an oni. you have no say, you have no right. You're in somebody else's home. You're in public property. You've just got to take whatever you see. You see people on the street behaving badly and you've got to just keep quiet about it because we're in the United States. And in the United States, we don't tell each other when we think we're behaving badly. We just mind our own business. Then you're an oni. You're a poor person. You have no control over the area around you. You're an oni. That's what an oni is. An oni is a person who has no control over their own territory. You come into your home, no matter how modest and humble your home might be, you become a balabos. You can do what you want there. You can set your standards there. You can create your values there. And you can determine who comes in and out and who does not come into that particular property. So that's where there is in Shabbos. And we have this idea of rishuyos, of a rishus hayochid and a rishus harabim, really, really important. And then we have to take it further and we have to understand what that means, what a rishus hayochid means. It means that I'm a balabais. If I'm a balabais, it's the one part, it's the one place where I can't say I'm a victim because I control it. I decide what there is in my house. And you say, children grow up and you say, well, what can you do? It's the influences of the streets and it's the influences of the school. Yeah, but you've got a home. You've got a home. You've got a place where there's no other influence. You choose what comes into the home. And that's what Rishus HaYochid is. Rishus HaYochid is a place you build for yourself. It's a place you design for yourself. It's a place for which you are accountable. It's a place that has your culture in it. It has your value system in it. It has your feeling in it. It has your way of doing things in it. It has your aesthetic environment in it. Everything in it reflects who you are. That's what a home is. And we have to be very conscious of that. And that's why we have a mezuzah on the door. Walk out, realize what's about to happen. You're about to transform from a balabait into an oni. And remember what's written in that mezuzah as you go out. When you come back in again, remember what's in that mezuzah as you come back into the house. Just to realize that's a moment of transformation. As every time you walk in and out of that door, you're transforming. You're transforming so much that if you were an object and somebody took you through that door, they would be high of misa, they would be high of the death sentence. That's how much you transform when you walk through a door. And you go from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. Or from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid. And we just have to be sensitive to it. We just have to feel it. Feel that energy. Feel the difference. And we don't. We just walk in and out. We don't feel anything. Which means we bring the Rishus HaRabim into our homes. Our homes become extensions of Rishus HaRabim. And we become aniim in our own homes. We can become poor people in our own homes. We think we're rich because we have internet access and we have TV, and we have the highest definition and technology of TVs, and we think that makes us rich. It doesn't. We lose control with that. I'm not saying we don't have it. I'm just saying you need to be conscious of it. That makes us anim. By bringing the Rishus HaRabim into our home, that impoverishes us. It doesn't enrich us. It enriches us when we choose what's in our home, what we see, what can be seen, what can be accessed. Not when somebody else in some studio is deciding what gets beamed into our home. That's not Ashirus. That's not a balabos. So look how beautiful it is when you look at how Masechta the Shabbos opens up with just a technical, minute detail of halacha. Look what it really is. Look what it reveals. Look what unfolds. So let's get a little bit more. That's the halachic idea of Shabbos. Let's get a little bit more idea of some of the concept, the feeling of Shabbos. So there's a wonderful pasuk in Yeshaya which gives the feeling of Shabbos. And Yeshaya says, "In toshiv mishabos raglecho." If you will bring your legs back on Shabbos, stop wandering, stop running around. It's a beautiful phrase. "In toshiv mishabos raglecho, aso is chafotzecho beyom kodshi." Stop doing the things you need to do on my holy day. Understand it's important for you, not important for me, says God. Stop doing that. It's my day. Shabbos is my day, not your day. The koroso la Shabbos, and you shall call Shabbos. It's one of the sources we have for Kiddush. Koroso, there's going to be a kriya. You declare Shabbos, oinek, pleasure. Likadosh Hashem Mechubod, dedicated to the Honorable Hashem, to the sanctity of the Honorable Hashem, the Chibad the Toy, and you shall honor Shabbos, and the way you do it is Me'asois Derochecho, from doing your things, Mimtsoi Chefzecho, from finding out your needs and discovering your needs and your desires. V'daber dover. Very difficult phrase. What does that mean, v'daber dover? It's generally taken to mean, as the Metsudas explains it, u'miladaber boi dover hanesar b'shabes k'chish boinus u'chiyetzin. Not to talk on Shabbos, things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. If you're not allowed to do it, you're not allowed to talk about it either. So you can't talk about your business arrangements, you can't talk about it. Anything to do with anything that you wouldn't be allowed to do on Shabbos, you're not allowed to talk about on Shabbos. The difficulty with that reading is that it doesn't say, with the others it says, may asos derochecho, be careful not to do your work, mim netzoichetzecho, don't find your needs, and it doesn't say, umidaber dover, and don't speak. It says, vedaber dover, and speak. So the context and the words itself are a little bit difficult. And what does that really mean? And Unkelus translates, Daber Dover is umalalo milin do'enos. Very difficult to translate it. Not Unkelus Targum Yonason reads it that way. The Radak says that what he means is oinos in Aramaic could mean saying bad things. So you shouldn't say bad things. So the Radak learns it the same way as the Metsudas learns it, that Daber Dover means you should not speak. So the Metsudas says you should not speak business things, things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. The Targum Yonason says that you shouldn't speak anything negative, anything destructive. But I don't read the Targum Yonason that way. I read the Targum Yonason, umalelo, because he doesn't say umimalelo. He also doesn't say, as he says earlier, mile mevadorcha, mile sapketzorcha. And then he says, umalelo, and speak, milin do'enos. Means only those things that are onus, things of matters of emergency. Wow. Is that possible? And speak only in an emergency, is what Targum Yonason would be saying. Imagine a Shabbos like that. Speak only in an emergency. Silent Shabbos. So let's see if that makes any sense. And let me take it further, assuming it meant that you sit in silence. So what's the karos of the Shabbos oinig? You have an oinig Shabbos. Have an oinig Shabbos, but you don't speak? What does that mean? Unless there's an emergency? We were in shul today in Yik, and never somebody had seemed to be a heart attack in the middle of shul. Was had to speak, had to clear the shul. Seems to be okay afterwards. Quite amazing. It was a man, I don't know if his name was there. It was a man well in his 90s who had just come on a flight from Australia for a simcha. And he collapsed, and he collapsed very seriously. And they called 911. By the time 911 came and he was on a stretcher, the paramedics couldn't keep him down. He was jumping and he was waving at everybody, and he wanted to jump off the stretcher. They actually had to hold him down. So funny. Wonderful to see. So that's matters of emergency. But imagine an Oinig Shabbos with matters of emergency. So what's the Oinig Shabbos? So there's an interesting redak. See if I can find it. Here we are. The Koros of the Shabbos Oinig, says the Radak, what does it mean you should have an Oinig Shabbos? Mitzvahs Aseh La'aneg Haguf B'yoyim HaShabbos. It is a mitzvahs Aseh, he says, a positive mitzvah, to pleasure the body on Shabbos. B'ma'acholim Arevim V'tovim. With delicious food. He doesn't say a lot of it, he just says delicious. Shemitoich Sheyeshanehu Misha'ar Yomim. Latoiv Yiskur Maase Bereshis. Because by changing his diet for the better, he'll remember Bereshis. V'shehakel chidshoim me'ayin. And that Hashem created everything from nothing. The idea is to have a delicacy on Shabbos that you haven't had before, that you wouldn't have during the week. That's what Shabbos meals are about. It's not about speaking. And Oneg Shabbos is about food. The Jews are right. It's all about food. But it's not about a mountain of cholent. But it is, if you look into, I'm not saying cholent's delicious, it's wonderful, but that's not what it's about. It's about a platter of delicacies that look and taste amazing, that took hours to prepare, one little piece. And that it's not there to satisfy. This is not about satisfying hunger. This is about just saying, wow, this is so delicious. This is amazing. And then you realize, chidush, I've never tasted this before. This is new. And then you start thinking about newness, about innovation, about creativity, culinary creativity. That's what it's meant to be. That's what a Shabbos meal is meant to be. Culinary creativity. That people sit around it and just say, my goodness, this is amazing. And that brings you to realize the whole Bria. What was that first Shabbos like? When everything was new. When everything was a culinary creation or a creation of some other sort. What was that Shabbos like? And who did that? That's Hashem, the master of innovation, the master of creation. So let's see if that makes any sense in the Gemara. So the Gemara that we'll learn is a piece of Yerushalmi from the 15th Perek in Masechta Shabbos, Halacha Gimel. And the Yerushalmi says the following, some amazing things. Loi nislu Shabbosos v'yomim tovim elo la'achila u'lishtia. Shabbos in Yom Tov was given for one activity only, eating and drinking. So eating and drinking is a religious requirement of Shabbos. Something you have to do. But you get an idea from the Radak what that means. It doesn't mean just sitting down to these heavy meals that you can't pick yourself up from. It means eating delicious things that you would never eat during the week. So you've got to think, this includes going out to restaurants. So you've got to think of the most delicious dish that the Pats makes, and you've got to say, Shabbos has to be way better. That's what Shabbos, way better. If it's something that you could get in a restaurant during the week, it's not Shabbos dish. That's not for Shabbos. Something that you could eat during the week, it's not for Shabbos. It's got to be something spectacular, something very amazing. That's what it has to be. Then he adds, the Gemara adds, but Chazal were worried that if people ate, they would come to talk. And when people sit at a meal and talk, they usually don't talk the most wise of things. And they get light, and there's a Lashon Hara, and there are all sorts of things, and that would undo the whole thing. So they made a heter. You're allowed to have Dvar Tivrei Torah. You're allowed to learn Torah on Shabbos. Incredible. You're allowed to learn Torah on Shabbos. So that you won't come to talk in other things. So one thing that's clear, this is not the final view in the Gemara, we'll see in a moment, but one thing is clear, the original desire was you wouldn't talk at all. You would just eat. You would eat in silence. Which is the right way to eat. If you're eating something that's amazing, that's really delicious, you've got to concentrate. And you want to take your mind from there to Maase Bereishis. There's a whole religious process going on. You don't talk when you're busy shaking your lulav and esrog. You don't talk when you're busy putting on your tefillin. Eating is an avodah on Shabbos. Not during the week. During the week you eat to live. You eat to be sustained. But on Shabbos it's an avodah. It's a mitzvah asa, says the Radak. When you're doing a mitzvah asa, you don't sit and talk. You certainly don't talk nonsense. But people were beginning to talk nonsense. They said, you know what, rather talk Torah. It's better to talk Torah than to talk nonsense. Best would be not to talk at all. To focus on the food. Because that's the mitzvah. Are you getting a sense of how reformed we are? How we've changed the Torah? It's quite amazing. And we get away with it. Now the reforms start changing the Torah, we get very angry. Who are you to change the Torah? We've got to check in on ourselves occasionally, and we realize we've also drifted off a little bit and not keeping Shabbos the way Shabbos is perhaps meant to be kept. Rabbi Brechia b'shem Rabbi Chia Barbo, Rabbi Brechia in the name of Rabbi Chia Barbo says, Lo nitna shabbosos v'yomim tovim, elo lasek v'yom b'divrei Torah. No, he says, I have a different view. It's not that food is the main thing and they allowed Torah. It was given only for Torah. The purpose of Shabbos is to learn Torah. Mastisin Messiah Bein Ledein says the Yerushalmi, there's a brisa that supports both views. Ketzer Oyser, the brisa says, O Yoshev Oichel, O Yoshev Eser B'divrei Torah, do you either eat, you sit and learn, what do you do? Kosovechodom e Shabbos ul Hashem, ve Kosovechodom e Natzeres Lashem Rakecho. One verse says it's Shabbos for God and it's a Yom Tov for Hashem, and another one says it's a Yom Tov for you. Or Ketzer Ten Chelkecho L'Talmud Torah V'Chelik Lecho, Chelik L'Talmud Torah V'Chelik Lecho V'Lishtes. Some of it should be for eating, some of it should be for eating and drinking, some of it should be for learning. Omar Rabbi Avo, Shabbos la Hashem, when the Torah says make it a Shabbos for Hashem, it means Shvois ke Hashem. Spend your Shabbos, do on Shabbos, rest the way Hashem rested. Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shovas, what did God stop doing on Shabbos? How did he create? Talking. He stopped talking on Shabbos. Because all he did the 6 days of the week was talk. He was a CEO. He wasn't a worker. He just gave instructions. And he gave the instructions and things got done. So what did he stop doing on Shabbos? Stop talking. Af atosh shavos b'mamar. So you too. Stop talking. And finally, the Yerushalmi says, the Yerushalmi says, "Bedoichak hitiru she'ela sholem b'shabbos." It was at a stretch of halacha that they allowed people to greet each other on Shabbos. Shouldn't even be allowed to greet each other on Shabbos. Now, I'm not drawing halachic conclusions from this, and I'm not suggesting that next Shabbos you don't speak. All I'm saying here is we have drifted off an understanding of how to utilize Shabbos. We've turned Shabbos into Sunday. Into a day of socializing and sitting around and talking and having meals together and going to shul to socialize. We've made it into a great social day, which is fine. It's good and certainly better than doing other things that people do on Shabbos. We may even learn a little bit. But we're missing the power of Shabbos. What is the power of Shabbos? What is Shabbos and how are we meant to use it? So now we're learning about what we're not supposed to do. Not supposed to talk. In addition to all the other things we're not supposed to do, we're not supposed to talk. It's interesting, by the way, that we do have the idea of a tainis dibur. People who are really working on themselves will take time out where they don't talk for a day. And it's interesting that even in Eastern religions, there's that idea of a silent day, of a day you don't talk. And it's a very powerful, if anybody's ever tried it, it's incredibly powerful. I tried it for 3 days. And it's unbelievably powerful. What insights you're able to gain, what a view of the world you gain, what a view of self that you gain, what a sense of tranquility that you're able to gain. It's absolutely amazing. And Shabbos is a silent day. But what's it really all about and what is it for? Let's extend the idea of Rishus. You see, we talked about geographic boundaries and the Rishus HaYochid and the Rishus HaRabim, and that's all true. It goes beyond that. Time also is a space. In halacha, this is a concept that we've had forever. In science, it's a little more recent. The idea that the time is a dimension. And just as you talk about a space that you can create, you can create a boundary, a rishus in space, you can create a rishus in time. And Shabbos is such a rishus. Shabbos is a Rishus HaYochid, and the weekdays are Rishus HaRabim. The weekdays are the days you engage with people. Shabbos is the day you replenish yourself. It's Rishus HaYochid. And if you just look at the laws, you see that. And Shabbos is different from Yom Tov in this respect. Yom Tov you're allowed to cook because you're meant to have people. Shabbos you're not allowed to cook because you're not meant to have people. It's not a day for having people. Again, I'm not saying stop having people. Don't change your lifestyle. Just think about it and absorb it and make decisions as to what you want to do with this information. But Shabbos was not designed for socializing. If it was, you would be allowed to cook. Once the Ribbono Shel Olam lost it, socialize, but you can't cook. What is that? It doesn't make sense. It makes sense if you say Shabbos is a day to be quiet. It's a day of silence. It's a day to connect with your own sensuality. When you're busy talking to people, you're not connecting with sensuality, especially if you're the hosts. You've got 15 people around your table. There's no Shabbos going on in that person's head. In that housewife's head, and probably in the husband's wife's head as well. There's no Shabbos. They're being mechallel Shabbos at that time. Not technically, but spiritually. They're being mechallel. They're worrying about their guests. They're doing wonderful things. A wonderful mitzvah. And I'm not talking about having somebody in your house who needs a place. That's different. Somebody doesn't have a place to be on Shabbos. You bring them into Yerusha Sayochit. That's chesed. That's achnosis orchim. That's tzedok. I'm talking about a people who've got as big a home as you've got, with as much money as you've got, and they could as easily entertain you as you're entertaining them, and probably next week they will. Just a matter of having a social event. By doing that, we miss something of Shabbos. We miss the Rishus Hayochit, nature of Shabbos. Just as you can move from the house out into the public domain, and you transform yourself when you do so, so when Shabbos comes in, you transform yourself, not only because of the Kedushas of Shabbos, but also because of the Rishus Hayochid nature of Shabbos. It's a time to connect with yourself. Because if you don't connect with yourself, how can you possibly connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam? Your tool for the connecting with the Ribbono Shel Olam is yourself. Through your own neshama, through your own feelings. That's how you connect with God. That's how you connect with people too. How can you maintain authentic connection with people if you erode self? And how can you avoid eroding self if you have no time for self? Shabbos is the time to restore self. That's what Shabbos is for. It's a time, and if you look at all the halachas of Shabbos, you see it absolutely clearly. It's a time not to be moving around, not to be running around, not to be talking, not to be thinking about anything that's on the next day, to be very present. You're not allowed to be thinking about tomorrow. You're not allowed to do anything to prepare for tomorrow. It's a time that you're in the moment. Difficult to be in the moment if you're busy taking care of a lot of people, interacting with a lot of people. So Shabbos is a time we replenish ourselves. There are two avodas we do that are for self-replenishment. The one is davening, and the other is Shabbos. And it's very interesting because both on davening and Shabbos, we do interact with people. It's not as if we isolate ourselves. See, because we don't isolate ourselves ever, even on a silent day. We insulate ourselves. And there's a very big difference between isolating and insulating. Isolating is if you have a flask of water that's at, you want to keep at 90 degrees centigrade, then you could put it into a room that is 90 degrees centigrade. And it will stay 90 degrees centigrade. You can put it into the oven. Or you can insulate it and you can put it into the fridge. And it will still stay at 90 degrees centigrade. If you were able to insulate it perfectly, it would stay 90 degrees centigrade forever. That's insulation. Insulation allows you to stay who you are no matter where you are. Isolation means I can only stay who I am if I'm away from everything else. And the Torah is all about insulation, not isolation. And Shabbos is the day and Tefillah is the time that you build your insulation. So that you can go out into the world. So that you can operate in the world. You restore your value system. You align your thinking. You get in touch with yourself. Those are the things you do. You connect with Ma'aseh Bereishis. You go back to the origin of the world. To the Sheishes Yemei Bereishis, to Shabbos, of the first Shabbos. You go back to the origins of the world. And where you fit in all of that. And what's happened from then until now. These are the things you're reflecting on Shabbos. And putting yourself in that context, in that historic context of who one is and how one is operating. And then we're able to build and we're able to understand how it is to function. Because Rabbim and Rishus HaYochid are not completely separate. They feed each other. The Oni does come and he puts his hand into the Rishus HaYochid. and the Baal HaBayis gives him something and he takes his hand out. That's normal. It's normal for every day. Just Shabbos it's a problem. Even though there's a Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaRabim, there is movement from one to the other. Because the way we impact the Rishus HaRabim, the way we impact the public domain, is through our private. The richer we are inside, the more impact we can have outside. And what's really important to know is the public determining my inside, or is my inside determining my inside and to some degree the public? Am I projecting my values onto the world, or is the world affecting and diluting and altering my value system inside? What is the dynamic? Where is it moving? Is the movement from inside to outside or from outside to inside? And we want the movement to be from inside to outside, that I impact the world, not that the world impacts me. I impact the world. Of course, we're all influenced by what's going on, but in Rishus HaRabim, not in Rishus HaYochid. In Rishus HaYochid, I should make every choice. What I want to feel, what I want to think, what I want to say, what I want around me, every choice in Rishus HaYochid, I should make myself. It should not be a function of the public. And for that you need replenishment time. You need to build that Rishus HaYochid. You need to build self. And in the Western world we're bad. In the United States we are the worst at that. It's one of our biggest weaknesses is time for self, the building of self, the recognition of the value of self. We're very, very influenced and impacted by what everybody else is doing and where everybody else is going and what everybody else is saying, because we don't have the self to be able to feel confident. The fact that we need brands to such a degree, because we don't know what's good and bad. We've got to be told, this is good because it's Gucci. Oh, okay. Now I know it's good. What do I know? I don't know anything. I know that Gucci thinks it's good. What do I think? I don't know what I think. And if you ask yourself, catch yourself all the time during the day, try it out, asking yourself, what do I think? What do I feel right now about this? You might find it quite difficult to answer. And to be sure that your answer is coming from you, not from the noise around you. Unless you're very careful to have regular time for self. And the times of davening. Davening is where we focus on those words, and it's just the word and me. And the focus is on the word. And Chaim Volozhin says, even if you don't understand the word, even if it's just the form of the word, the sound of the word, if you understand the meaning, that's another layer. Just meditate. We actually meditate on each word of the davening. That's all. It says me and the word. That's all there is. There is a rabbin. There's a minion. So I'm not isolated. I'm insulated. I'm with a minion, but I'm insulated. And on Shabbos too. I walk in the street. I go to shul. I say good Shabbos to people. I interact. Sometimes I do have guests in my home. People need a Shabbos place to be. I'm interacting, but not by letting go of my Rishus HaYochid, of my private space, of my private self, that it's so important to build on Shabbos. And this is really what Shabbos is. It's quite interesting. We see it even in Halacha. And let's just take it to its final stages of having a look at it in the Halacha itself, in the Shulchan Aruch. Also, lihis anois b'Shabbos ad vav shoyes. Not allowed to fast 6 hours on Shabbos, because if you fasted 6 hours, it's like fasting the whole day. So you've got to make sure that you eat before 6 hours after sunrise on a Shabbos. Not allowed to fast. Well, now we understand why not, because on Shabbos it's very important. The avodah is eating, but it's eating in a very delicate, fine way that makes you appreciate all the wonderful things of the bria. And what about if a person needs to do a tiny scholem? The halacha deals, a person has had a bad dream, and when you have a bad dream, you're supposed to fast. So the halacha says in those cases you're allowed to fast. But the Beis Yosef says, the Shulchan Aruch brings it, that you should learn. If you're fasting on Shabbos, you should learn. Why? What's the connection? And then you have a kapara, then you're forgiven for fasting, if you're learning. Why is that? And there's another really interesting halacha. because it's quite interesting. On this Yerushalmi, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who's brilliant at finding connections to things you wouldn't think are connected but are very important to see. On this Yerushalmi, he notes this Shulchan Aruch, where the Shulchan Aruch says that if you're a Talmid Chacham, then you must make sure that you eat something delicious. If you're a regular guy, not a Talmid Chacham, then it's more important that you learn. In other words, you've got to do something you don't normally do. If you learn Torah all week, have something really good to eat. If you eat all week, make sure you learn some really good Torah. And why does Rabbi Akiva Eiger mention it there? Because he's talking about resolving the apparent tension that we see in the Yerushalmi. Remember those two statements in the Yerushalmi? The one saying Shabbos is just given for eat food and drink, and they allowed Talmud Torah. And the other one says Shabbos was just given for Talmud Torah. Is there a tension? Are those two opposites? And it's clear from Rabbi Akiva Eiger's connection and from that posuk that we learned, and the Radak's comment on it. What does oneg mean? What oneg means pleasure, but it's a specific type of oneg. In this context, oneg is very specific. Oneg is the nourishment you experience, the sensual nourishment you experience from newness. Because the halacha also brings that when you do learn on Shabbos, you should learn something new. You should either innovate, say something new yourself, determine a new idea, or learn something that you've never learned before. It's about newness. So we see in the eating, you should eat something you don't normally eat. And when you learn, you should learn something you don't normally learn. Why? Because there is a sensual enjoyment in learning for those who've been able to feel it. And that's something our son Moshe was telling me, that Rabbi Gifter, the late Rosh Yeshiva of Tel Yeshiva, used to say that what drove people to learn in Lithuania, because people used to learn like crazy, it was unbelievable how they used to learn. I was just looking at in the home of my host, my balabais. I'm the oni. I'm draying around the streets at the moment, and my balabais, Solon and Glynis Gerber, have hosted me over Shabbos, and I'm very appreciative of that. And in their home, they had a little book by Hanav Teller, and he went through the life. Little book goes through the lives of 10 different gedolim, and I just opened the first one, who was Reb Nochum of Mir, who I knew fairly well, and he talks about how Reb Nochum was in Shanghai during the war trying to get to America and had to go to the consul, as they all had to get a visa and had to have an interview and be evaluated. And his day turned out to be Tisha B'Av. So there was a big discussion. There were a few young men who had their day on Tisha B'Av, and the question was, do you get dressed properly? Do you put on shoes? Do you have a shower? Do you shave? Because in those days the Yeshiva Bochum used to shave, believe it or not. And they used to look very good. They used to look very, really good when they were dressed up, the Yeshiva Bochum of those days. But on Tisha B'Av they didn't look their best. Just come out of the 9 days on Tisha B'Av. So different people made different choices. He decided not to do anything different, to go as he was, and he got his visa. And Hanatella says Avigdor Nebensal is also somebody who's a great Rav in Yerushalayim today, I also know very well, said, but what you don't realize is for Reb Nochum, it was the biggest relief that his turn came on Tisha B'Av. Because on Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to learn. So he didn't have to sacrifice any learning time. He didn't go through and say, oh goodness, it's Tisha B'Av, what a nuisance, now what do I do? He just said, thank God, it was Tisha B'Av. There's no sacrifice. It's a miracle that I'm going on Tisha B'Av. There was no question in his mind. Because what drove those people to learn was the enjoyment, the sensual pleasure of learning new insights. Now, it's hard for you to understand that, because sometimes, you know, you hear a vort at a table, and if you experience some of the vorts that I've experienced, it's not sensual pleasure. And if you've been in some of the shuls with some of the rabbis, there are some rabbis, and again, where I was today, it was sensual pleasure to listen to the rabbi, but in some shuls, it's not sensual pleasure to listen to the rabbi. So sometimes when you go to a shir, you go to a Gemara shir, and you're just kind of waiting for this thing to finish. Many of you probably don't know what I'm talking about, what that sensual pleasure is to be learning. I had a Rosh Hashiva staying in our home years ago, and I got up about 2 o'clock in the morning. I heard sounds in the house and went, and I found him learning. And he was terribly embarrassed that I found him learning. He said, you probably think I'm a masnid, which means you probably think I learn very hard. I said, well, yeah, kind of, if you normally do this. He says, "It's not, I'm not a masmid. I just have such a yetzahara to learn. I love it. I just love it so much. I can't sleep." To know what that central pleasure, that's the learning on Shabbos they're talking about. Not learning, oh, you've got to learn. Shabbos, you've got to learn. You've got to go to shir. You've got to say Dvar Torah at the table, no matter how bad. No, it's about central pleasure. It's about chidushim. It's about a new insight. That just as you want to taste something and say, "Wow, this tastes amazing. This is incredible. What is it? So many different flavors. And how did you put this together? And look how beautiful it looks." That's the comment that tells you you're kind of on track for Shabbos cooking. The same is with the Dvar Torah. You want somebody to find that same pleasure and say, "Wow, what an idea, what an insight, where does that come from? Changes the world, this is new." So that you experience the thrill of newness. That's Oneg Shabbos. Oneg Shabbos is nothing else but being able to experience the thrill, the excitement of something new, of something innovative, of something different. That's what Shabbos is about. And we use food as a vehicle, and we use Torah as a vehicle. Those are the two things where you can most easily create the sensual feeling of newness. Wine, important on Shabbos. You can do it with good wine. These are the things that help you sense, sensually sense, newness, and get excited about it. And that becomes important, and it's part of our avodah on Shabbos. That's what we're meant to do on Shabbos. And not talking. Concentrate on the food. Just taste it. Get the complexity of taste. So that you're able to really get that feeling of complexity. Focus on it. Concentrate on it. Meditate on it. Reflect on it. That's what Shabbos is really for. So what does one do practically? Each person figures out what works for them, and if the thing that you enjoy most is socializing on Shabbos, then that's important to do. Each person is very subjective. Halacha can give guidelines. But what I would like you to go away with from tonight is knowing you don't have to socialize. And I can't tell you how many people, when I've given a similar share to this in various parts of the world, how many people have come up to me, emailed after me, and just said, "Thank you for giving me permission to do what I know is right." A lot of us know that the way we spend Shabbos is not what Shabbos is about. But there's this thing. So it kind of goes. They invited me, we invite them, and there was somebody else, they invited me, so I got to invite them, and on it goes. And each one's got to outdo each other with the volume of food, never mind the presentation of the food. And Shabbos just becomes a heavy day of social obligation and consumption, instead of a day of fine culinary or intellectual experience. If you're an intellectual, you will enjoy the Torah. If you're an essential person, you'll enjoy the food. Either is fine. But focus on the Torah, on the food. Those are the really important parts. The rest, they were matzi. They allow. It's not an Isur Shabbos. But it's not the way Shabbos is meant to be. And I would suggest that if you do feel that way, you just cut down a little bit. If you have people for one meal, not for two. And then go out for both meals. Have a meal alone. Just the family. Every Shabbos, have at least one meal alone. Unless there's somebody who needs it. Shabbos, there's somebody in shul who really needs a place to go. That's different. But to feel an obligation to entertain and frequently take a Shabbos out altogether. But use it for the right things. Don't take a Shabbos out and crash. That's also not Shabbos. You're allowed to have shema. You're allowed to sleep on Shabbos. It's also part of something that brings a sense of refreshment. Because when you wake up, you feel good. It's not the sleeping that's good. It's the waking up that's good. That's the Ma'aseh Bereishis. It's the waking up and saying, "I'm awake, I'm feeling refreshed." That's part of the newness. That's why sleeping is an avodah on Shabbos. That you don't have to sleep for hours to wake up. You can sleep for half an hour and wake up. Because the avodah is waking up. The avodah is not the sleeping. So it's not an idea. There are many people I know who actually have a nap on Friday afternoon. So that they're ready for Shabbos. They're not exhausted on Shabbos. Why do you want to be exhausted when you're about to go into such a sophisticated, complex avodah, a service of God that requires so many different parts of you and requires such concentration? So again, I'm not giving this shiur this evening is not for halachic ramifications. Don't go and change your lifestyle without consulting your incompetent rabbis, who will probably tell you that they don't know where this comes from, and it's against everything which Jews have been doing forever, is probably what they'll tell you, and that's okay. You've got to decide, does it feel right for me? Is this something I can do? So can I modify my Shabbos lifestyle somewhat to allow myself more time to replenish myself? because that's what Shabbos is about. And if I'm replenished, I can nourish the world. If I'm depleted, I can do nothing for the world. And Shabbos is the time to nourish, to replenish oneself, so that we can nourish the world. So once again, it's been wonderful to spend these few days in Los Angeles. I've had an opportunity to be with my son, who's now moved to back to Los Angeles. I have an opportunity to be with my brother, who's now moved to Los Angeles. So there was some wonderful family time, which I'm very grateful for. And I hope to be here again for a good few days and over a weekend over Hanukkah. So perhaps we can reconvene at that time. By that time, maybe you would have tried this out a little bit, and it would be good to get some feedback. Those of you who have acted, just experiment with it. Play with it. Try it. Just compare. Do a Shabbos with, do a Shabbos without. Try focusing on the food. One Shabbos decide you're going to eat very little, but it's going to be unbelievable. Whether you buy it or you do it yourself, just it's going to be something unbelievable. Experiment. Play with it. And when you eat it very slowly. Eat like the French eat. They understand this. The French do this every day. We do it once. All we have to do it is once a week. For the French, food and wine is an avodah. Now, I've always said that after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, each nation was given a piece of our avodah to take care of until Mashiach comes. And then they'll teach us again how to do it. How to meditate, the Asians got. How to eat and drink, the French got. Each one has got some little piece of avodah which we'll have to incorporate. But it's getting time for that already. We've got to learn how to do these things again. So just experiment with it and have fun. And journal. It'll be quite an end of Shabbos. Write down what you felt. How was it? Good? Was it difficult? Did you get new insights? Was it hard to keep quiet? You know, even if you don't do a complete silent one, just calm down a little bit over Shabbos. Just calm down. And build your Rishus HaYochid. So that during the week, when you move in and out from Rishus HaRavim to Rishus HaYochid, you're able to take yourself with you. And be yourself wherever you are. And know yourself. Know what you feel and know what you think. And not be pushed around by everybody else wherever you are. Because comes Shabbos, you're able to reconnect with the Borei Olam, with the Creator of the world, the power of innovation, the power of creativeness, your own innovation and your own creativeness, which you can celebrate and enjoy in a way that is truly Oneg Shabbos. So once again, thank you to all of you, and thank you to Roy and to Laurie for the shiur this evening, for the home this evening.